Open your Bibles again to Isaiah 58. Isaiah 58. And in this verse 8, he makes a statement, "Thine health shall spring forth speedily." And we're talking about fasting. This is one of the results of fasting, that our health is going to spring forth speedily. And all this was covered on the message prior to this one. And the assumption, remember, is not if you fast, but it's when you fast. Meaning, from God's perspective, we will fast. And it's obvious that what we've seen so far, that the Christians there in the New Testament did fast and so forth. And what we're looking at this point in time in this series has to do with physical aspects of fasting. Some of the things that we will see as far as health is concerned in our fasting. Types of fasts. How to go into a fast. How to come out of a fast. How to avoid excess weight gain after a fast, and so on and so forth. Because all of these things are accomplishable, if that's a word, but we just have to know how to do it. And remember, part of the biggest problem when it comes to fasting has to do with our culture and the way that we've trained ourselves to eat. And so we have to do a lot of untraining as far as our body is concerned. Remember over in Esther chapter 4, verse 16, we saw a 3-day no food and no water fast. And again, I want to emphasize, it is not at all wise to go without water while you are fasting. That is something that you simply just do not want to do. It is not a good practice. And so do not in any way, shape, or form misconstrue anything that I've said as a form of endorsing fasting, not just food, but also of water. In Daniel chapter 10, verses 2 and 3, he ate no bread, no meat, or drank no wine for 21 days. And that's what's referred to as a Daniel's fast, a fast whereby you just simply eat vegetables and fruits and so forth and drink water. And then in Matthew chapter 4, verses 1 through 2, and then also recorded in a couple of the other Gospels, Jesus fasted for 40 days without food. He had water, but he had no food. And as we've covered, most nutritionists and those who are who have done a lot of fasting agree that the most efficient and effective fast is water only. And there are other ways, though, to fast just besides the 40 days. We talked about those who fast from sun up to sundown, those who fast one or two meals per day, and then also series fasting. And again, series fasting is when you are fasting like a day on, day off, or 2 days on, 2 days off, or a day on, 2 days on, 1 day off, just, you know, different cycles like that. Cycle fasting, series fasting. And the longer the fast, the better the results. It's just like praying in the Spirit. The more you pray in the Spirit, the more results you're going to get. The more you fast, the more results you're going to get. But don't ever put yourself under condemnation because you hear all these 40-day fast stories and you're not on one, you haven't done one yet, and so forth. If you, there are two schools of thought on this. One would be 40-day fasts once or twice a year. Another would be a fasted lifestyle, which is where you, I guess maybe another to put it would be a continual lifestyle of series fasting. 2 or 3 days on, day or 2 or 3 off. 2 or 3 days on, day or 2 or 3 off, something like that. And just think about it. If, just hypothetically, if you fasted every other day, by the end of a year, you would have fasted for 6 months. That's quite a bit. If you fast 2 days on, 2 days off, by the end of a year, you will have fasted for half a year. Now, to just say to somebody, well, why don't you fast for 6 months? That's like saying, why don't you drop dead? You know, you can't do that. However, if you do it through series fasting, then it is possible. And maybe you don't want to do a one day on, one day off type of a thing to where it ends up being a total of 6 months. But even if you did 1 day on, 2 days off, 1 day on, 2 days off, by the end of the year, you will have fasted for 1/3 of an entire year. And so, yes, you do get benefits from your fasting. Just because you are fasting, you're still enforcing that positional truth of death upon the flesh. And we covered briefly how that if you've never done much fasting, but immediately you jump into a 40-day fast, then your body is probably going to go into rebellion, because the dietary lifestyles in this country are not conducive to going into a 40-day fast if you've never fasted before. That's why it's a good idea to do some preparation fasting. If you intend to do a 40-day fast, it's recommended that you fast maybe for a few days and then come off of it, and then maybe for a week and come off of that. And in other words, develop a pattern of fasting so that when you hit that time that you want to actually do the 40-day fast, your body is prepared for it, your dietary habits have changed to the point to where your body will not be shocked at what you're trying to do to it. It's going to be able to more easily help that. Then also we talked about the fact that your blood sugar levels are going to come into play. Our dietary habits in this country are not conducive to maintaining stable blood sugar levels because of all the fast food, because of the prep food that we purchase that essentially is already cooked and we just nuke it and then eat it, because of all of the canned foods and everything that's out there that we tend to eat in all the restaurants and so on and so forth it goes. Those foods are not designed for health for the most part. They're designed for you to eat. Just eat and spend your money and go on about life. Because of that, we in this country, most people do not have stable blood sugar levels. And this is borne out by the fact that so many people can complain of different types of health, like lethargy, you know, feeling like, well, I just don't feel like doing anything and so forth. Well, a lot of this is directly attributed to blood sugar levels. And levels that are just, they cycle too much, up and down way too much variation. And so therefore, when you go into a fast, it's very possible that your blood sugar, as it's returning to normal, your body goes into a withdrawal. And it can mess you up. Like I shared what I have encountered in the past when my blood sugar just, you know, does a number on me. And it's not because I'm doing something bad to my body. It's that my body is not used to me doing something good to it. And so to help get through this, I will incorporate combinations of, like, I might drink 4 ounces of vegetable juice. Then later on, 4 ounces of a fruit juice, a non-acidic fruit juice. And then later on, drink some water. Or at one time, I just might drink a small glass of the vegetable juice, then a small glass of the fruit juice, then a small glass of the water, something like that. But that really helps me a lot to keep my blood sugar even so that I don't get goofy and have a hard time concentrating and, you know, don't even want to drive. You know, hand the keys to Kathy and say, here, you take it. So this helps out a lot. And again, this isn't something that necessarily will be permanent. But it's because we've trained our bodies to live in such a, you know, disrupted state that when we try to put it where it's supposed to be, we get messed up. And fasting can really help tremendously in this. Now, a lot of times, I can remember back when I, as I mentioned to you, I worked at a weight management clinic for one of those companies for quite a while. And one of the questions that invariably came up had to do with caffeine. In fact, when we would have people come to be a part of this program, one of the questions we asked them was, you know, how much coffee do you drink? Because that the word coffee and the word caffeine, you know, essentially you're saying the same thing. We would ask them that. And I can remember there was one couple that came in, husband and wife, and they both wanted to get involved, lose some weight, and so forth. And so I asked them that question, you know, how much caffeine, what's your caffeine intake like? You know, coffee, how much do you drink? They kind of looked at each other and said, they said something like, probably about 6 or 7 in the morning before 10. And I said, what? You eat or drinking 6 or 7 cups of coffee before 10 a.m. in the morning? And he looked at me and said, oh, no. 6 or 7 pots of coffee. And I said, what are you talking about? Well, it turned out they owned a McDonald's franchise. And they had to be there like at 4 a.m., 4:30 to start getting things ready and so on and so forth for the morning rush. And then he said, as soon as we walk in, we put the pots of coffee on. And before 10 a.m., we've each consumed about 6 or 7 pots of coffee. Now, those pots aren't monster pots, but, I mean, listen, I don't know about you. I think I'd be on the floor having a seizure or something. I don't think I could walk. I'd be rubber-legged. I'd be cross-eyed. My nostrils would be flaring. I would be ate up big time. 6 or 7 pots of coffee. Well, caffeine is without a doubt one of the greatest enemies of fasting. Not just weight loss, but fasting. And this is especially true for coffee, because unlike other drinks that have caffeine, coffee also has certain acids. And this can be especially true depending upon whatever chemicals might have been used in the roasting process. There are some brands of coffee, and I won't name any names, but in one brand in particular, if I drink maybe a cup or two of that coffee 2 or 3 days in a row, I promise you, I will feel like I have eaten Ex-Lax. It purges me. And it's the way they roast the beans. Now, not everybody reacts in the same way, but roasting is different. And so the roasting can also compound the problem. But the acids in the coffee combined with the caffeine in coffee, it's like a double whammy, if you will. Some people have asked some people think espresso has more caffeine in it than a regular cup of coffee, and it doesn't. Essentially, espresso, if it's brewed properly, is going to have the same amount of caffeine, just in a smaller amount of fluid, all right? So by fluid content, yes, there's more caffeine, but by per drink that you would purchase, there's really not any more caffeine. It's just a lot stronger. But caffeine literally is considered a drug in some circles. In fact, if an Olympic athlete tests too high of caffeine content in his or her blood, they will be disqualified from an event. They'll have their medal stripped from them. Yes, caffeine is on the banned list for Olympic athletes. Now, so we think of things like steroids and so forth, but they consider it right in the same category. Caffeine, that's amazing. And in fact, it was either the past, within the last two Olympics, there was an athlete who was disqualified, tested too high for caffeine. And the thing was, it was just from coffee. It wasn't from the caffeine pills that you can buy in the store. It was just coffee. And the person got eliminated, and they lost whatever medal that it was that they had won. Caffeine can stimulate a false sense of hunger. People who are trying to lose weight often can't if they're drinking coffee at the same time, because caffeine can stimulate a false sense of hunger in people. And now, this isn't in every single person. And this is why one of the reasons why drinking caffeine or coffee while you're fasting is a terrible, terrible idea. Nursing mothers who drink coffee or any beverage that has caffeine in it, the caffeine is passed through the mother's system into the infant. That infant can experience the effects of that caffeine for anywhere from 30 to 210 hours later. That's over 8 days. Meaning, if mama is drinking caffeine every day, the caffeine is building up in baby's body. Now, in theory, there's no medical science to prove this, but could it be possible that nursing mothers who take in caffeine, 1, 2, 3 cups of coffee or a Mountain Dew or whatever it would be, is it possible that a lot of children's problems, like attention deficit syndrome and so forth, could be caused because of the terrible effects of caffeine that have built up in their systems while they were just infants? Like I said, there is no medical science to prove one way or the other on that. However, if the effects of one cup of coffee can last in a baby anywhere from 30 to 210 hours later, what if mama's drinking 2 or 3 cups a day, every single day, and nursing that baby? The effects, who knows what they are. Well, anyway, caffeine also has the potential to cause a whole lot of problems that can be symptomatic of other sicknesses or diseases. Headaches, irritability, tremors, nervousness, shortness of breath, and irregular heartbeats. Some people have actually felt like they were having a heart attack and it was nothing more than excess caffeine. But what's interesting is that the University of Washington did a study and found out that heavy coffee drinkers, people who drink 5 cups or more per day, actually increase their chances for cardiac arrest, heart attacks, because of the caffeine that's in the system. Some people are more sensitive to caffeine than others. And sudden withdrawal from caffeine can cause severe headaches. I don't know if any of you heard Dave Roberson's testimony. He used to drink coffee. He wasn't a super, well, I guess he was kind of a heavy coffee drinker. But he cut it off, just cold turkey, just cut it off. And he was laid up in bed for over a day, nearly 2 days, because of the headaches that he was having. And he said Rosalie, his wife, just laughed because she's not a coffee drinker. So she kind of let him have it on that. But anyway, it's interesting how that people who are more sensitive to caffeine than others, if they are heavy consumers of caffeine or moderate to heavy consumers of caffeine, if they cut it off cold turkey, they can go through something, a mild version of drug withdrawal. Like when junkies come off of drugs, they can go through a mild version of that because their body tends to be more sensitive to caffeine. So when it comes to fasting and caffeine, for the most part, it's don't do it. I mean, obviously, yeah, you can choose to do anything you want. Now, here's something that's interesting, though. A lot of people who have consumed caffeine, not to great amounts, but maybe a cup or two of coffee a day, or maybe a Mountain Dew or two a day, or something like that. Because Mountain Dew has a whole lot of... Did you know that? Mountain Dew is major. Now, here's what's interesting. You can go into stores now. You know bottled water? You can buy bottled water that has caffeine added to it. It's on the shelf. Well, there are some people who have... they've been, you know, moderate to mild caffeine intakers. And they didn't know that they had any kind of problems, didn't believe they were having any kind of problems whatsoever as far as the caffeine is concerned until they went off it. When they went off it, they suddenly realized some things had changed in their body. Not even for a fast. They just went off the caffeine. They suddenly realized that some things that had been going on in their body that they really hadn't paid attention to had stopped. And they realized they actually had been having caffeine-related problems and didn't even know it. So this could happen for you. If you're a person who drinks caffeine in some way, shape, or form, chocolate has caffeine, candy bars. Now, it's not as much as like in a cup of coffee, but when you go on a fast, it is very wise to eliminate all caffeine. Coffee, tea that has caffeine. Now, most herbal teas don't have caffeine. Sometimes they do. You make sure you read the boxes. Pop, soda pop that has caffeine in it, you know, Coke and Dr. Pepper, you know, all the others, chocolate. I mean, anything that has caffeine in it, it's a good idea to eliminate that as you're going into a fast. And, if you are a caffeine drinker, whatever caffeine would be in, I'm going to give you a very good way to come off of it to avoid any kind of withdrawal problems. Let's take the example of somebody who drinks, say, 4 cups of coffee a day. Cut it back to 2 cups a day. The 2 cups that you have eliminated, replace that with water, preferably distilled water. Replace it with water. Because what will happen is your body is going to be able to adjust to half the caffeine. You shouldn't have too many problems from that, cutting it by half. But the excess water is going to help to flush any caffeine that's been stored up in the body. See, a lot of folks didn't know, for a long time, they did not know that caffeine, the body actually stored caffeine. And it could take a while for it to be completely flushed out. So if you're like a 4 or a 6 cup or a 5 cup or whatever you are, you know, cut it by half, replace the half that you've eliminated with water. In fact, it's even better if you increase the amount of water. Do that for about 2 or 3 days, then cut it in half again, or cut it down to just 1 cup, do that for a couple of days, and then eliminate it completely, and you should have no problems whatsoever. Now, here's something that's interesting. Remember in Isaiah, he said that your health shall spring forth speedily. And the word speedily means quickly. It means something is going to happen and it won't be a long drawn out process, like years of recovery or whatever. It's when you fast, something happens. Well, believe it or not, medical science has now proven that. Now listen to this. Oh, everything I'm going to be sharing with you tonight, it can be documented, and in a few moments I'm going to give you a couple of websites that you can log on to. There are so many out there with good information. If you log on to, if you use a search engine and just start going through some of these sites that have information about fasting, you're going to end up with one of the most complete guides on fasting and nutrition and so on and so forth. And it's going to save you money because you can print it out for free with your computer. So anyway, in fact, there are some books that are almost completely loaded onto a website. So instead of buying the book, you just print the whole book out right there on your computer. Many medical studies indicate that fasting somehow triggers something in the body to begin regenerating itself and fighting various illnesses. Why are people surprised when they discover these things, especially when it's been in the Bible all this time? Well, Dr. Gregory Hogg is the health director at the GLH Center in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and at Mountain Mist in Waynesville, North Carolina. Now, these are treatment centers where people that, have you heard of those, like health retreats, where folks go and they sit cross-legged and they eat, you know, granola? It's one of those places where you go to try and rejuvenate your body. Well, anyway, he's the health director there. He's been there for over 20 years. And he said that in 20 years of supervising fasts, he has seen patients recover from or experience drastic improvements from things like cardiovascular disease, arthritis, asthma, non-insulin dependent diabetes, ulcers, digestive disorders, lupus, skin problems, cysts, tumors, and kidney stones. I mean, that's a massive list of problems that he has seen either completely disappear from a person's body, or they have experienced an incredible amount of recovery. In other words, it wasn't quite as bad. And I know this, that when sometimes when you fast, you may pass kidney stones. And we'll get into that a little bit here in just a few moments. As you're preparing for a longer fast, it's extremely important that you do it in the right way. Because if you don't, you could end up with some problems. Not one nutritionist or seasoned faster recommends a longer fast without preparation. Some suggest that you use as many days in preparation as you plan to fast. Then you take as many days to come off the fast as you have fasted. In other words, it would be like this. Let's say you're going to fast for 20 days. Well, some believe that you need to prepare for 20 days, then fast your 20 days, then spend 20 days coming off of it. Or if it's a 40 days, it would be 40 days going in, then the fast, then 40 days coming off. There are others who don't believe that's necessary. Some think that if you just spend a week of preparation, that you're going to be able to go into a longer fast. But what seems to be somewhat consistent for a longer fast, as far as your preparation is concerned, it should be anywhere from 1 to 2 weeks of dietary preparation before you go into a longer fast. And what I'm going to do is give you some information on how to go into a fast. And this essentially would be a 1.5 week preparation time. Now, it could be longer, or you could cut it down to 1 week. But this essentially is going to be a 1.5 week to 2 week preparation time. Now, let me give you, since you're about ready to start writing, let me give you two websites that you can go to, and you're going to find some incredible information. And these are not the only websites. How many of you know what a search engine is? It's a little place on your, when you open up, you go onto the internet, and there will be a little bitty box someplace that will say, search the web for, or whatever. Just type in the word fasting and hit enter, and then you're going to pull up some screens that will list all kinds of websites to fasting. Click on one of those websites, it'll pull that website up. When you're done looking at that website, close that screen, and you're looking right again at that list of all the locations. But I'm only going to give you two. These are not, I would not say these are the best. There are just two that are very good. One is www.godsbanquet, one word, .com. www.godsbanquet.com. God's Banquet, lowercase letters, all one word. The other one is www.hps-on-line.com. Now let me walk through that one. It's www.h as in Harry, P as in Paul, S as in Sam, then the dash mark, and then the word on, O-N, then hit your space bar, and then the word line, L-I-N-E, .com. So it's hps-on-line.com. Now I'm going to give you a book, the title of a book that is an excellent book. To the best of my knowledge, I don't think this book, the man that wrote this book, he's a doctor, I'm not sure he's a Christian. But the information in the book is absolutely incredible. The title is Staying Healthy with Nutrition, The Complete Guide to Diet and Nutritional Medicine. I'll read the title again, then I'll give you the author. Staying Healthy with Nutrition, The Complete Guide to Diet and Nutritional Medicine. It is written by Elson M. Haas, M.D. His name is spelled E-L-S-O-N. That's his first name. Middle initial M, as in Matthew. Last name Haas, H-A-A-S, M.D. This book is printed in, almost in entirety on the Internet. And I don't recall the website. It might have been that HPS website. I'm not sure. But it's printed almost in its entirety. And it is just an absolutely incredible book. A lot of the information I'm getting ready to share with you, sadly enough, it's almost impossible to find this anywhere in Christian bookstores or by Christian authors. When you talk about health and nutrition and fasting, the New Agers have it on the body of Christ. They understand it more so than Christians do. And a lot of Christians, they don't want to touch anything that's not written or recorded or whatever, unless it's written or recorded, you know, by another Christian. Well, the problem is in the body of Christ, there is so little information concerning fasting and the health issues related to that. You're going to have to go outside the body of Christ to really get quality stuff. Now, in the last couple of years, some really good books have come out. I think there's a man, a Dr. Colbert. I believe he's got a really good book out. I don't know how much of fasting he's got in there, but he's got health issues that are related to fasting, meaning what you read, and part of what you'll read in his book, it ties right into the concept of fasting. There's a Dr. Cherry. He has some a couple of good books out there. But for the most part, it is hard to find anything written by Christians that deal with this. And a lot of these books that are out there that are written by non-Christians and some of the folks you would call New Agers, in these books, sometimes they really don't go into a whole lot of New Age philosophy. It's just health stuff. It's just body-related stuff. A lot of Christians are turned off by the word holistic, because holistic is a word that is used many times in New Age circles, body, soul, and spirit. And that term sometimes has been related to some kind of weird stuff. However, in Scripture, it says over there in Thessalonians that the God of all grace sanctify you wholly, body, soul, and spirit. Right? That's holistic. The word holistic simply means entire. There's nothing, you know, new agey or guru-y about it. It just simply means entire. And so as far as a Christian is concerned, holistic simply means body, soul, and spirit. That's all it means. And so when you talk about holistic medicine, you're not necessarily talking about crystal balls and, you know, psychics. You're talking about dealing with all parts of you. From the world's perspective, holistic medicine would include psychotherapy, possibly, from a world's perspective. From the Christian viewpoint, holistic medicine would be, you know, your body, but then also your soul and your spirit from a biblical perspective. So it just depends on which, if you will, philosophy you're using to deal with the whole man, the world's or God's. But when it comes to the body, essentially it's going to be the same, world or man. Because health for the body is health for the body, and it doesn't matter if you're saint or sinner. Your body is still going to operate essentially on the same principles. Now, as you go into a fast, and this is primarily for longer fasts. When I say longer fasts, I would say, you know, at least, you know, a 10 day or longer. But most people consider a longer fast to be like 20 days up to 40. As you go into a fast, as you're preparing now, this is the 1.5 to 2 week preparation. Begin by eating smaller meals. This is extremely important. How many of you have gone to a restaurant and just ordered a meal off the menu? And they bring you so much food, you feel guilty if you don't eat it all. Then you feel bad when you ate it all. And whatever was left, you took home so you could finish it the next day. And we know when we eat, we honestly don't need to consume that much. But sometimes, boy, it is so good, we don't want to stop. And other times, again, we've been trained. You eat everything on your plate. There are starving children in China. And so you eat everything on your plate and feel miserable when you're done. So as you prepare to go into a longer fast, it's very important that you reduce the size of your meals. If you eat slower, it's easier to reduce how much you consume. Because if you eat very fast, what happens is this. As you eat and you put food in, your body begins to your stomach begins to send messages to your brain, telling the brain how much it has. You can eat faster than the messages can be sent. That's why you eat, and everything's going fine, and then all of a sudden, you feel like you're going to explode. And you didn't think you had been eating that much. That's because you were eating faster than your brain and your stomach could communicate. It's like your stomach's down there and it's telling your brain, okay, I got a fork. No, wait, I got two forks. No, wait, I got three spoons. No, wait a minute. I've got a bowl. No, wait a minute. They're putting another plate. Help me. So it's possible to eat faster than your brain can assimilate the information it's receiving. If you slow down, your stomach and your brain can adequately communicate, and then your brain can tell you, excuse me, but we are done now. And your stomach will stand in agreement and say, that's right, please don't put any more down here. I don't want any more. So if you eat slower, you can more easily cut down the amount of your meals. And also, if you don't do this already, try to include small snacks 2 or 3 times throughout the day. Now what this is going to do, the smaller meals and the snacks, it begins to stabilize your metabolism and your blood sugar. And this is extremely important for fasting. Because most people eat in a way that causes their metabolism and blood sugar to be so messed up that when you go into a fast, your body says, you must be nuts if you think I'm going to agree to this. So if you begin to cut down on the amounts you eat and then include the snacks, what was kind of like a mountain range before begins to level out and become like just small hills, which is okay. Just small swings is perfectly all right, and that's normal. If you eat meat during the first day or two of this preparation time, try to eat only turkey or chicken, eliminating all beef, pork, and shellfish, preferably all fish. It's best to eliminate all meat. But if you don't want to eliminate the turkey or the chicken the first couple of days, or eliminate all meat, it's best to stick with just turkey or chicken the first couple of days. And during the preparation time, stop eating all high-fat foods and sugary foods. Underline that one. Increase your fresh fruits, your vegetables, your salads, and your water. By the third day, you should eliminate all meats, breads, and any remaining high-fat, high-sugar foods and desserts. In exchange for the foods you're eliminating, substitute fruit, vegetables, salads, fruit juices, vegetable juices, and water. This almost sounds like a weight loss program, doesn't it? But it's not. It's a fast preparation program. But guess what one of the results will be? You will lose weight. Now, as far as the water is concerned, here's something interesting. You know, we talked about water a little bit and how distilled or filtered water will be best for you. If you can choose between the two, choose distilled. The reason for that is distilled water, this is a really interesting thing about distilled water, and I'm not a chemist, I don't understand all the wherefores about all that, but distilled water literally has magnetic properties once it's in your body. When distilled water is in your body, it begins attracting excess amounts of metals. Metals you don't need. And we're going to bring something up here a little bit later on. It's pretty amazing. And so distilled water acts kind of like a magnet to pull these things out of your system. While you're going through this preparation process, it's still good to stay with the three meals a day plus the two or three snacks. And with your salads, avoid the typical heavy dressings like French, ranch, blue cheese, even if it says fat-free, avoid those. Dressings that you might consider would be like vinaigrette dressings, especially like a raspberry vinaigrette or something. Those tend to be the fat-free kind now. If you have to have a dressing, that's usually a better choice. And as far as your fruit juices are concerned, avoid acidic juices such as orange juice. But if you feel like you have to have orange juice, cut it in half with water. For example, if you pour a 4-ounce glass of orange juice, then add 4 ounces of distilled water with it to cut it in half, to cut the acid in half. You'll still get the vitamins and minerals from the orange juice, but you'll just reduce the potential for acid problems. Juices that are better are apple, pear, grapefruit, papaya, watermelon, and cantaloupe. Those tend to be the best juices. You say, well, I never seen cantaloupe juice anywhere. Well, you probably won't unless you make it yourself. You can get juicers. If you're thinking of getting a juicer, again, I would go to the internet and look up juicers and search around, because some are terribly, terribly, terribly overpriced and don't do everything they should. So you can find good information about juicers. A good juicer is going to retain the proper amount of pulp, fiber, vitamins, minerals, etc., and so forth in the juice. If you don't have a juicer and you purchase your juices, try to buy those that do not have any sugar in them, which will be a challenge because so many of them have so much sugar. You can also drink caffeine-free herb teas. As you're preparing for your fast and during your fast, it's very good to include exercise. And walking is without a doubt the best fasting exercise there is. Here's something interesting about walking as far as fasting is concerned. It actually stimulates the breakdown of fat and the burning of toxins. Well, it does that anyway. But when you include walking with your fasting preparation and the fast itself and coming off the fast, it's like it increases your body's potential and capacity to burn toxins and waste and flush a lot of this stuff out of your system. If you're unaccustomed to drinking a lot of water or fruit juices, and you go like from 0 to 8 glasses a day, your body can handle it, all right? You're not going to mess your body up by going from 0 to 8. But you might mess up your job as your boss watches you run back and forth, wearing out the carpet in the hallway to the restroom. So it's not the intake, it's the outflow. That could create the problem. So a good way to do that is to increase your intake gradually. Let's say that you basically don't drink anything unless it's, you know, your Coke at lunchtime or whatever, or your coffee in the morning. Start off with, say, 2 glasses. We're talking, you know, roughly 8-ounce glasses of your water or your juice. Start off, preferably water, and again, preferably distilled. Start off with 2 glasses. Do that for about 2 or 3 days. then increase it by 2 glasses for another couple of days. Then increase it by another couple of glasses, because eventually what will happen, your body will adjust to the extra fluid and put it to work. And you won't be making all these trips to the bathroom. Believe it or not, your body can handle 64 ounces of water every day. And it can do it in a way that won't produce additional trips to the restroom. And here's something else concerning the water. A lot of people who complain of headaches quite often, and they don't know what causes them, many times these headaches are attributed, they're actually dehydration headaches. As your body wants water, if you're not giving it the water, your body tries to send you a signal. It says, if you do not give me the water that I need, I'm going to hit you in the head and give you some problems. Many times, if you feel as though you have a headache, try drinking about anywhere from, say, 6 to 12 ounces of water. Just drink it in. Just drink it in. It's possible your headache is going to go away. Many people struggle and suffer with dehydration headaches and don't even know that's what it is. It's just a lack of water. 2 or 3 days before actually beginning your fast, eat lots of fresh vegetables and salad. Eat very deliberately and chew your foods very thoroughly and drink a whole lot of water. Because as you're doing that, you're getting your stomach prepared for nothing, no food. By deliberately taking your time to eat, in your mouth, you're doing a lot of the digestive work for your stomach. So that when it gets to your stomach doesn't have as much work to do. So that's something, you know, like the 2 or 3 days before actually doing the fast. Now, you've entered the fast. Let's talk about that for a little bit. You've actually entered into the fast. There is a question that if you get around fasting circles much, which I seriously doubt too many people here have, which is no big deal because most in the body of Christ don't. But when you get around a lot of fasters, and it doesn't, Christians or non-Christians, when you get around people that do a lot of fasting, and the topic of fasting comes up, you begin to talk about it, I guarantee you what will come up sooner or later in the conversation. Enemas and colonics. You say, that sounds disgusting. Well, yes, it may sound disgusting, but people who do a lot of fasting, what you might call professional fasters, this is going to come up in this country especially because of our dietary habits. Enemas and colonics are going to come up. And there are some people who are, I mean, when they fast, going longer fasts, they include enemas and colonics. Now, for most people, the immediate response is, that just sounds the most utmost disgusting. I just can't believe you're even saying such a thing. Who in the world would do that? Well, I'm going to give you some information that may help you understand why it is a lot of the folks get involved with these enemas and the colonics. Most all nutritionists agree that enemas and colonics can be of benefit during a fast. This is because the body is already in the process of breaking down toxins that the enema or colonic can help break down and flush out. That's one thing about when you go into a fast, your body, you don't even have to tell it, immediately it begins breaking down toxins. Whenever you go into a fast, it immediately begins breaking down toxins. And I believe that is part of what God's talking about here in this verse in Isaiah, that your health will spring forth speedily. Because there is a component of fasting that causes the body to start breaking these toxins down. Nothing else you do replaces it. The way that fasting causes the body or motivates the body to break these toxins down, exercise, anything else won't do it. Fasting has a way of doing this that nothing else can replicate. Not even medication, nothing. And so it's not something that you have to do, but it's something to consider. Now, enemas flush out the rectum and a small part of the descending colon. But colonics, or some people refer to them as colenemas, a colonic enema, flush further up into the transverse and ascending portions of the colon where toxic waste accumulates. Think of it like this. The colon is a sewer system with lots of twists and turns. Let me give you an example. I don't know, Steve and Sandy, if you'll remember this, but when we had that meeting at our house one time, you know, a bunch of the folks when we were down at Springboro, and we, you know, it was on a Saturday night, or no, it was a Friday night. We all got together, we had food, and the sink, kitchen sink backed up. I don't know if you remember that. Well, the kitchen, everything's going fine, and all of a sudden it backs up. Could not figure out what the problem was. Plunge, 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 nothing works. Steve looks at it, and he says, well, you know, this will have to come off and all that. So I ended up calling Roto-Rooter the next day. Roto-Rooter comes out. The guy looks at it, and he says, ah, no problem. So he takes his little Roto-Rooter thing and, you know, does his little doodad with it, you know, and nothing. So he says, well, you know, I'll get a little bit bigger one. So he goes to the truck, and he pulls a little bit bigger one, brings it in, and does it, and nothing. Still plugged up. So he goes to the truck and brings in a bigger one. He runs it in. Nothing. It doesn't clear it out. He looks at me and he says, sir, I believe we have a problem here. This guy's getting this worried look on his face. Goes to the truck and he gets this bigger thing. Brings it in, plugs it in. I mean, most things, you know, you hand crank them, right? This was a plug-in deal. Runs it in. Nothing. So he has to go out to the truck. We have an alley behind our house. He has to go out to the truck, pull the truck around in back of the alley to the where the alley is, and bring in this monstrous contraption on wheels. He hooks it up, starts running it through, plugs it in, and the one that he used was one that they literally use on municipal sewer systems to clean them out. He had to get the super big monster size thing. Well, anyway, what had happened was, when we would put stuff in the sink, we have a basement, it drops down that pipe in the basement, and once it goes through the pipe in the basement, that pipe goes down underneath the cement floor, and then it elbows, or makes an L turn, to run into the main drain of the sewer, so everything gets flushed out. When he ran that big one through, he said, based upon how much of it had to go, you know, unroll and go down through, he said it went all the way down, made the L turn under the basement floor, and went almost all the way out to the street. That's how bad it was. Here's what happens. When you have a house with a basement, you have the pipe that drops from the kitchen, it goes, the stuff, whatever you put in, it goes straight down and goes and just lays there. Now, sometimes the water flushes it out. But for the most part, it just kind of accumulates. And the guy said, this happens invariably. After so many years, if you use this a lot, especially if you use a disposal, it accumulates in the pipe and we'll have to come in and clean it out like this. Your colon is like that. It has all these twists and turns. Simply drinking water will not clean it out. So you eat all the junk that Americans are used to eating, and guess what? You swallow it, it hits the colon and goes, and it begins to accumulate. Now, enemas only clean out and flush the bottom part. But a colonic, it's like a flushing system. Anybody ever here ever flushed out a radiator? All right, here's how we used to do it at the gas station. Somebody would come in, we flush out the radiator. We would open up the plug down at the bottom of the radiator, start the car, take a garden hose and put it in the top of the radiator and turn the water on just a little bit. Water is going in at the top. Because the engine is running, it's flushing through the water pump, through everything. In the cooling system, and it comes out the bottom. We do that for like 15, 20 minutes, half an hour. The water at the bottom begins coming out clear. All right? A colonic is like flushing your entire system. It's not just an enema. Enemas can be done. You can lay on the floor, give yourself an enema. You get up, you go to the toilet to eliminate. A colonic is done on what's called a colonic board. You lie on this board and literally you're flushing yourself out. And the elimination takes place from the board. It can either go into the toilet or it will go into like a, it could go into maybe a bucket, but there are containers you can get. And you can see what comes out. And you'll understand here in just a few moments. Most nutritionists agree that it can take anywhere from 8 to 12 colonics before you are adequately flushed out. Each colonic can cost anywhere from $80 to $150. So it's a lot cheaper to buy it and do it at home. I know you're getting ready to just rush out here and go find... Tell me where to get them, Pastor. Tell me where to get them. Well, good health food stores. I'm not talking about the ones in the malls. You go in there and ask them for a colonic board and they're going to give you one of those, you know, dog, huh? but the good health food stores usually know where you, or you can look up in the phone book. Nutritionists, you can look up holistic medicine, and they're going to have this information. The church doesn't have it. They do. And so they're ahead of us in these things, folks. Now, the body will burn toxins and waste without enemas or colonics, but the colonics dramatically increase the effectiveness of the fast. Many people who complain of getting lots of colds, the flu, or feeling lousy and sick all the time, they're really not sick. It's really not a cold. It's really not the flu. It's your body experiencing an increase of toxin levels. And that's why, you know, if more people did something as far as their health was concerned, be a lot less problems as far as adapting to antibiotics. You know, you take antibiotics to the point where eventually germs just don't respond to them anymore. Well, a lot of sicknesses that exist have nothing to do with actually being sick. A lot of things, you know, a doctor can look at you and say, well, you've got a such and such virus. And they really can't do anything for you. A lot of it's not a virus. It's simply all these toxins that have built up in the body. Now, let me read something else to you here. As you're fasting, the first day is simple. It takes usually about 24 hours for the body to commence detoxification and start pouring toxins into the bloodstream for elimination. The second and third days are the most difficult. By then, your bloodstream will be carrying up to 10 times its normal load of toxins as the entire body excretes accumulated poisons into the blood for disposal. You will feel weak, fatigued, stiff, lightheaded, and perhaps nauseous, much like a hangover. Of course, I know you guys don't know anything about that. Yeah, sure you don't. Anyway, this is not due to nutritional deficiency, so do not make the most common mistake of first-time fasters, which is to break the fast prematurely by eating something to pick you up. The moment you eat something, the unpleasant symptoms of detoxification disappear. Not because of the nutrients in the food, but because the food signals the body to halt the detoxification process and gear up for digestion and metabolism instead. The worse you feel during the first 3 days, the more toxic are your tissues, and the better the program is working. Hang in there, and you will soon feel better than ever. I mean, that's encouraging, isn't it? The worse I feel, the better I'm doing. That's modern lifestyles put tremendous toxic strain on your vital organs and glands. The stomach is perpetually stuffed with denatured foods taken in incompatible combinations. The liver is swollen and strained with the effort of breaking down massive intakes of animal protein and fat, as well as drugs and poisons. The pancreas balloons to abnormal size owing to the constant demand for digestive enzymes to process enzymeless foods, and the colon gets lined with layer upon layer of glue-like crud that poisons the bloodstream. Of all the vital organs in the body, the ones that suffer the most abuse from modern dietary habits are the large and small intestines. Our colons were designed by nature to function as smoothly flowing sewer systems in order to promptly flush digestive wastes from the body. Instead, they have become stagnant cesspools, the physiological equivalent to a festering pile of uncollected garbage or a broken toilet that continues to be used. The average American and European intestines carry within him over 5 pounds of putrid, half-digested red meat, plus another 5 to 10 pounds of foul, toxic mucus waste impacted for years in the folds of the colon and small intestines. Yes. So who's going to eat after church tonight? When food that is not wholesome, combined incorrectly, or is harmful to the body reaches the stomach, word is immediately sent from the stomach to the mucus manufacturer, warning, get busy, the enemy is on the way. Mucus starts to be produced immediately, and the colon and small intestines are lined with it. 12 to 18 hours later, when the poisoned or harmful food from the stomach finally enters the small intestines and then the colon is well prepared with a layer of mucus lining it so that the body does not absorb any of the poison. The same holds true for the small intestines. Were this to happen once or even several times in a month, this mucus, having been used, would disintegrate and slowly be discharged from the colon with no harm done. But it is apparent that nature never intended for the protective mechanism to be used as continuously as it is today. The result is that layer on top of layer is secreted until its accumulation thickens to 3/8 of an inch or 1/4 of an inch. Sometimes this layer gets to 3/8 to 1/2 inch in thickness, becoming as hard and black as a piece of old hardened rubber you would see on the highway torn from a truck tire. We have had a few specimens preserved in alcohol from several inches to a few feet in length, while the longest we have had was 27 feet in one piece. That is unbelievable. Regardless of your financial standing, regardless of your past health history, regardless of your age or sex, you do have this hardened mucus in your intestines, and you will be amazed by what comes out of you. And this is not just with the colonics, but even in fasting, some of this stuff can't, not as much, but the fasting can purge some of it, but the colonic added to the fasting is just going to increase this, because once you start fasting, the body already senses, okay, it's cleansing time, let's get to work. And it's like the body starts working harder to purge the colon and the intestines of all of this stuff. Then when you add the colonics, it's like you're taking a lot of pressure off of the body for the elimination of this stuff, and it starts flushing all of this out a lot easier. Sometimes it will come out as a pile weighing as much as 11 pounds, continuing to come out for several days to a week, depending upon how much, you know, what condition your body is in. During the first fast with colenemas or colonics, the first 2 or 3 days often failed to produce the dramatic evacuations of foul, toxic wastes expected. That's not because your colon is clean, but because the dried mucus and toxins are so deeply impacted in the folds of your colon that it takes 6 to 8 colonics just to start jarring them loose. One of the most severe cases failed to evacuate anything of significance through 4 full 7-day programs, fastings with colonics. But then, on the 5th fast, an avalanche of black hard poisons came pouring out with every colonic. Generally, you will start passing these toxified incrustations of mucus on the 4th or 5th day and continue to do so until the end of the fast. This deathly junk is collected in a colander under the colenema board, and you should carefully inspect it after each session. By seeing what comes out of you each time, you will be strongly motivated to continue through the end of the program. If by the 7th day you are still expelling a lot of waste, you may choose to continue the program for up to 10 days, or else stop and wait till your next fast. Do not attempt to fast more than 10 days by yourself unless you've done at least a half dozen 7 to 10 day fasts with the colonics. The less toxic your system becomes, the easier it is to maintain fasting. Don't expect to get everything out during the first fast. It usually takes about 4 7-day fasting with colonic programs, and sometimes with many fasts in between, to effectively cleanse the colon and completely detoxify the tissues. One, as they have it here, Master Faster recounts how after 5 years, now listen to this, after 5 years of 4 annual 7-day fasts, he went on a 10-day fast, on the 7th day of which he said, I had a terrific bowel evacuation, and at the end of this evacuation, I felt a heavy, cool sensation in my rectum and passed out a third of a cup of quicksilver, which is mercury, that came from the Calomel medication that I had taken during my childhood. All those years, that stuff had just been sitting in his body. If you're afraid to administer your own colonics with the Colenum aboard, then look for a qualified colonic therapist and have that person perform the first series for you in a clinic. After that, you'll realize how easy and safe it is, and you can do the series, the next series at home. This is safe and effective for children, pregnant women, and the elderly. For children ages 4 to 10, you might want to seek additional consultation before actually doing this. Now, right along with all of this, it's not just the junk and the toxic stuff, all that crud that will come out. You're also looking at the probability of seeing what's a good way to put it? Well, parasites. Parasites come out. Bugs, stuff, wormy-looking things come out. Ken Homer, many of you know who Ken Homer is, Elaine's husband. He tells the story how that he went and was having a colonic. During the colonic, the person administering the colonic to him began pressing on his side. And he said he felt excruciating pain, terrible pain. And he was ready to jump up and maybe smack the person. It hurt so bad. And they said, just hold on a little bit longer, hold on a little bit longer, and kept pushing. And then all of a sudden, he passed all of these stones that had been in there for a long time. And as the person administering the colonic looked at them, they asked him a question. You must eat a lot of pork. And he said, I never eat pork. And they asked him, well, these kinds of stones, what we have here, and then some parasites came out too. They said, these kinds of stones, these kinds of parasites, you only get them with pork. Are you sure you don't eat a lot of pork? He said, I don't eat a lot of pork. He said, well, are you around pigs a lot? He said, no. They asked him, well, have you ever been around pigs a lot? He said, well, yeah, back when I was growing up, you know, Uncle so-and-so or whatever had a farm with a lot of pigs. He raised them for food production. So, yeah, we were around them a lot. And they said, oh, well, then that's where it came from. He said, but I haven't been there in years. They said, it doesn't matter. Anybody who's around pigs has these parasites in them. And if you eat a lot of pork, you have these parasites in you. They said, it's not an if, it's not a maybe. You have them in your system. And this is the only way they can be flushed. This is pretty amazing, isn't it? That's why when you fast, your body, it triggers this whole thing of, hey, I'm in a purging process now. See, your body really doesn't understand spiritual things too much. It just knows something good is happening to it. It recognizes that you have made a choice to kick in a detoxification program. That's essential. From a physiological standpoint, fasting is like that, a detoxification program. And the body recognizes this, and so it says, hey, you've made that choice. This is great. I'm going to feel better. And it's like it just, it increases its attack on all the stuff that's in the body. This is why a lot of people can experience during the first few days of a fast some horrible, terrible, miserable feelings. It's because your body's in the process I'm purging some stuff out that needs to be purged. But when you add the colonics to it, it's as though you tag team with your body against all this stuff that is in there. Now see, as we're sitting here tonight, not one of us feels like we've got that stuff. I mean, honestly, we really don't feel toxins. You know what I'm saying? Even though, compared to the way they ate in the Bible, we really are toxic waste dumps. All the stuff, the processed foods and so forth that we eat. As such, you know, it's just like, you know what a landfill is? You know, they take stuff in, they dump it, they cover it over. Nobody knows it's in there. All right? We go home, we stand in front of the mirror. I don't see any toxins. I don't see any parasites. What's he talking about? That's because it's covered up with the flesh. But that stuff is on the inside. And as we begin to, I know of one situation, a person heard a story like this. Didn't even go for a colonic, just one enema, because he was having some, he was so sick, he was laid up in bed. And it was Kennedy Lane Homer went and ministered to him. The guy couldn't get out of bed. And Ken Homer looked at him and said, you know what your problem is? You need an enema. Now, what?
There's a lot of people in churches I think need some enemas. Maybe that's part of the problem. Not enough enemas in the church, right? Well, let's see. We've heard of communion and foot washing, but I don't know about that one, Pastor. What would you say if somebody looked at you and said, you need an enema? Oh, yeah? Well, let me tell you what you need. And the guy kind of put up a little bit of a fuss about it. And Ken said, no, I'm telling you, you need an enema. He said, if you'll give yourself an enema, you'll be out of that bed. You won't go back into the bed. You're going to feel that good. They go, oh, man, you're nuts. You know, I don't know what this is. You know, pray for me. No. Ken said, we'll pray for you, but I'm telling you, you need an enema. Well, that sounds pretty off the wall. But the guy got to thinking about it after they left. And he thought, you know, I guess it wouldn't hurt. So, he gave himself an enema. And he called Ken and Elaine. And he said, here, they'll believe this. I feel so good. He says, I don't feel sick at all. My headache's gone. The nausea is gone. Everything's gone. I'm totally recovered. It's a miracle. And Ken said, no, it's not a miracle. It's just that you were so messed up on the inside. You needed to get that junk out of you. And God wasn't constipated. It was just toxins. He said, Lord God Almighty, I have never been in a service where a preacher talked like this. And but you know what? If the body of Christ had more of this information, it's possible we'd be a whole lot healthy, you know? Yeah. Healthier. Right. Really. Oh, and by the way, enema bags, you can get them like at Walmart. Well, if you don't know, you need to know. You can get them at Walmart. You can get them at Kmart. And they might be called like an all-purpose bag or something like that because some people use them to water the flowers with. No, I'm joking. So what can I say, you know? Now they're called like, I don't know the title, but it doesn't, I mean, if you walk into Walmart and say, can I get an enema bag? You know, you might get some funny looks. But if you go over into the area where they sell the health products, it'll be a bag. It'll be probably in a box or, you know, and it'll say something like all purpose bag or whatever. Because sometimes ladies use these for personal hygiene and so forth. And it's the same kind of a bag. I'm not going to go into that one, okay? And as far as the enemas are concerned, there are a lot of enema proponents who will tell you that a coffee enema will work best. Yes. A coffee enema. Now, the way that you do a coffee enema, don't listen. I got to get this tape because nobody's going to believe me. A coffee enema. No. Somebody threw that heckler out. No, for a coffee enema, you do not want decaf. Seriously, you want coffee with caffeine in it. And
Buy the cheap stuff, all right? We don't need Starbucks. Hello, Mr. Starbucks. Yes, I'd like a pound of that right there. Oh, really? You're thirsty? Well, no, sir. Don't ask. You don't want to know. Just buy the cheap stuff. Brew it very, very strong. Extremely strong. After you brew it, please let it cool down a little bit. Or you will be doing the Macarena big time. No cream, no sugar. It's super strong black. Because when you use the coffee from that end, you've bypassed the absorption system in your body and the caffeine doesn't get absorbed and sit throughout your body. But what you're doing is the caffeine literally stimulates the intestines, the colon, and all of that up in there to begin working harder. And by doing that, it causes them to begin to flush themselves more proficiently. And so a coffee enema, in fact, coffee enemas are a controversial treatment for cancer. You can't get it done therapeutically here in the United States as a cancer treatment. Remember Steve McQueen died of cancer? He went to Mexico for coffee enema therapy for cancer. I mean, he did pass away, but this is the coffee enemas literally are a good way to administer an enema. And then after you've done it with the coffee, if you want to come back in with some clear water, you can, but you really don't have to, because there's really nothing that the coffee would leave behind that would create any kind of a problem that would need to be flushed out. So coffee enemas would be very good. Now, I know this sounds, you know, really kind of off the wall, but the information you've received tonight, I agree, it's not excessively, well, okay, no, I was going to say it's not excessively, you know, scriptural, but remember, I was sharing this on Saturday, remember in the Bible, the bitter waters of Marah, how that the Israelites complained, you know, we can't drink this water, it's bitter. Well, I've done some reading on that, and apparently those waters were high in magnesium content. Magnesium, you ever heard of milk of magnesia? All right. Magnesium is a natural diuretic or laxative. And so by getting the people to drink those waters, what God was actually doing was helping to clean them out. Well, they didn't know that. You know, didn't understand it that way. But that's what that was about. And so we actually have a scriptural precedent for doing something to help cleanse our system out. But I'll guarantee you this. The Israelites who were at Marah and drinking that water, they were in no way close to the same kind of shape that most people in this country are as far as what's going on the inside of us. Now, again, consider, just simply consider adding enemas or the colonics. And again, if you've never had a colonic, you're not comfortable with it, a few phone calls. You know, go to it. There's a good health food store at Town and Country Shopping Center. Find a good health food store. I guarantee you they're going to know how to put you on the right direction to somebody in the area who does these kinds of things. And it's very therapeutic, and it's very professional and so forth. There are a lot of people, I won't run down the list, but there are a lot of people I know who do this. It's a part of their regimen. When they fast, they also do things like this. Bill Roberson, Dave Roberson's son, Dave finally talked him into, you know, not with just a fast, but do some colonics. When he did, I forget how many pounds of stones they flushed out of him. When they were finished, Bill made the comment to his dad, "I have never felt this good in all my life. I cannot remember ever feeling this good, not even when I was a kid. This is unbelievable." One of the reasons this can help, another one of the reasons, is because with all that stuff inside, your body is expending a tremendous amount of energy just to keep you going, to suppress the near-killing effects that that stuff could have on you. And so this is something that you could consider to add
to your fasting. And even if you're not fasting, the enemas and the colonics are still going to be of some benefit. So, you know, we'll just pick up from there and continue on. Say, God, I hope not. So go ahead and stand. What in the world is he going to talk about next time? You know, God never designed our bodies to need such things. But because of how we live in this country, even though that kind of stuff may seem like an extreme measure, we've brought it on ourselves. You know, when our best friends are the golden arches, we bring it on ourselves. And this is one of the reasons, I mean, this is amazing how that just within the last few years, like within the last 5 to 7 years, medical science is now starting to figure out, gee whiz, all these people that are having these medical problems, you think there's a connection between them and the fact that they're the generation that grew up at the fast food restaurants? Well, that should be a no-brainer. And now look at the generation that's coming up behind us. More of that is available than ever before. So God never designed our bodies to have things like this, but thank God there's something we can do to help out.